Hello, and welcome to the Resilient Life Podcast. Resilient Life is part of peakprosperity.com. It's where we focus on practical and actionable knowledge for building a better future. I'm your host, Adam Taggart. Well, since my recent podcast on emergency preparedness with Matt Stein, we've seen the extensive damage Hurricane Irma inflicted on Florida, the absolute carnage Hurricane Maria is wreaking on the Caribbean, and a devastating 7.4 magnitude earthquake in Mexico City. It's been a sadly traumatic 2 weeks. Joining us this week is longtime Peak Prosperity member Chaz Peeling, an expert on backup electrical solutions. A key topic right now is the aforementioned disasters have knocked out power for millions. We'll be talking with Chaz today about the importance of having backup electrical solutions in place before emergency strikes, and we'll explore the pros and cons of the various types of solutions out there in the market. Chaz's company, Sol Solutions, manufactures portable solar generators, so I'm sure he'll have lots to say about those. Chaz, thanks so much for joining us today for this very timely discussion. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for inviting me over, Adam.
All right. Well, first off, give our listeners a quick background on how you came to be an expert in this field.
Well, I've been living off-grid actually for quite a number of years, kind of the homestead life, or what I call the off-grid life, where you had to learn how to make your own electricity when you're not hooked up to the grid. And doing that is kind of a learning experience, and it makes you more aware of where your stuff comes from, including your electricity. And early on, starting in the 80s, I started learning about electric and solar and batteries just to hook up some lights or have radio or any kind of music or doing any kind of activity at all. So that was my start in the solar business, and it's been predominantly off-grid. Most of the time, I've also been involved in electrical and work in the construction trades too, a number of years. And I've always had that interest on resiliency, homesteading and that kind of thing, do it yourself. That's been my background. Sol Solutions has been going about 10 years now. We started building our own made in USA solar generators, specifically for temporary power, off-grid power, and backup power. And that's what we've been doing, and we continually are adding to that portfolio and offering solutions for people across the board for, providing your own power, lighting, that kind of thing.
Okay. So let's get to some of those disasters that I mentioned earlier and talk about the importance of having backup power in case it goes out, whether it's due to a natural disaster or regular blackout or some grid down event or whatever. You wrote a great piece on this topic for the Peak Prosperity website back in 2012. What are kind of the key facts people need to know about this topic?
We witnessed a lot of activity under Superstorm Sandy and some of the earlier hurricanes in Florida, the tornadoes that hit the South. And one of the things that was noted, we'd always get a lot of calls coming in after the fact, because people realized the grid would be down. Maybe people might experience only 1 day or 2 day, but certain areas where the actual utility infrastructure was really destroyed, power lines and stuff, people went through, sometimes weeks without power in certain areas during these last disasters. The other thing that was it was a real surprise for people, not in a pleasant way, is their usual backup, which would be gas generators. They suddenly realized there was no gas available. And that kind of threw a curveball to a lot of people that thought, oh, well, I have a generator and I'll just plug it in. There was another a series of, technical issues that need to be addressed and continually need to be addressed around how you go ahead and feed your own electric into your, meter or into your house system that is constantly being addressed by, electrical contractors and the utilities to be able to do it safely. Resiliency and emergency preparedness, disaster preparedness across the board is a constant educational process to get you personally ready for when there's no outside services. And that could be a lot of other things, including water, gas, electric availability, gasoline, the road closed, anything like that. So whatever you can have ready that's immediately available at your home or in your neighborhood is probably a really good thing at this point. And that is the definition of preparedness.
Okay, yeah. And, you know, I'm just thinking about the people right now who live in Puerto Rico, right, that just took the direct hit from Hurricane Maria, where right now the entire island is without power. So it's not even like, you know, there's a neighborhood that you can go over that still has power. The entire island of 3.5 million people has no power right now. So unless you had some sort of solution line like this lined up in advance, you know, you are basically living in the dark ages until the central authorities there start getting that system back online, which of course is going to take a long, long time. I think we're talking weeks to months here for many people.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. It's going to take quite a lot of work to put that back together. And I would say, you know, utilities in the United States are, you know, fairly highly regarded, you know, service industry. And when these kind of weather-related disasters happen, there's, you know, a lot of, you know, work and emphasis is put on to restore power. But the power grid is very much an essential component of our modern lifestyle across the board, and it affects communication, it affects food, it affects water, it affects, you know, transportation, everything, because it's all touched and run by electricity. And when that electricity stops, okay, back to square one. What do you do?
Yep. All right, well, let's start there, sort of with the topic of electricity. So let's say I'm somebody listening to this podcast. I'm watching some of these disasters happening and realizing that, you know, the same thing could happen in my area for whatever reason. Of course, out here in California, that's probably likely to be an earthquake, but mm-hmm. it certainly could be other things as well. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have, you know, a backup system in place right now, what are the questions I should start asking? How should I start thinking about this? What are the different solutions out there? How might I be looking at which ones might be appropriate for my homestead?
Yeah.
And then earlier you said, you know, some of this stuff requires, or at least electric contractors are involved in making sure this stuff is sort of set up safely and whatnot. How much of this could a regular, you know, person do who doesn't know a lot about electricity? How much do they need to rely on an expert for? You know, basically, how would a regular person begin to think through all this?
Well, there's definitely the regular homeowner and person that wants to be more prepared for disasters. There's much you can do personally right now having to do with the short term. And there's stuff that you can get that's available right now across the board to markets that has really come along that is all about short-term power that's small and portable, almost consumer grade. One of the key things is lighting. Very important that you have lighting both in your house and if you have to go outside. So there's a bunch of new technology having to do with the new smaller lithium batteries with solar inputs and LED lights that has transformed a lot of the portable and personal lighting solutions that are out there. You know, if your batteries run down or you can't buy batteries from the store, that's not going to help you. But there is quite a lot of new, you know, lighting devices from flashlights to camping lights to you name it that have very long batteries that don't run down that can be solar charged and or charged from any kind of bigger input such as a generator or your car. Many, many of them now will plug in a cigarette lighter or they'll plug into a bigger battery pack or you know, charge off a generator or charge off the sun. Those are highly recommended these days to throw in your glove box of your car, have in your emergency backup pack that you might keep at your house. You know, everyone should have one of those. They're very reasonable price now and they've really kind of got them down. This is something that we've added into our portfolio and kind of sorted through some of the best. And I've literally had flashlights I've thrown in a glove box or a drawer for 6 months or a year longer, pull out and they still work.
They still work.
Which is amazing because the old style batteries never did that. So that's just one little thing that you could do.
Sorry to interrupt, but that just sounds like a really essential first step, which is, of course, you know, if you can't see, there's really not much you can do once the sun goes down. So These are essentially flashlights, lanterns, et cetera, that you're saying are super efficient because they've got the modern LED technology. And then the batteries are rechargeable. Are they batteries you take out and can use interchangeably, or is it a built-in battery to the device and you're charging that device?
It's a built-in battery device. It's a new lithium battery technology that is able to hold a charge a long, long time, does not run down. And it has more power for the density for the size of the device. And it's usually three-way charging, either solar or cigarette lighter or, 110 AC power if you have the right adapter. And one of the additional things a lot of these, as they keep expanding, have is a USB output. And there's a lot of universal power starting to go on in the electronics world, which is very handy, and it ties in to your cell phone and to your other devices. If you can also do an emergency charge on your phone, that helps with your communication. If you have any other little USB-type devices, then you can charge it off these items. And as you move up the chain, there are some bigger devices now that have an even bigger battery pack that can run lighting longer. And even we're seeing some very good car-based jump starter packs right now. With
lithium
packs. Yeah, that are actually in the 1,000 to 2,000 milliamp range. That very, very good. They will actually jump start many vehicles, have a light on them, have a USB output charge. So you're always going to have your communication device. You're going to have a light, and you could jump start your car. So those are just really basic kind of stuff that you can get these days in the $100 to $200 range.
All right, great. That was my next question. Okay, great. So pretty affordable for very valuable, fundamental kind of, bottom of the pyramid resiliency here.
Right? Exactly. This is what we call personal preparedness items, the flashlight, the battery pack, and that kind of thing. And they keep scaling up what we call personal level power lighting. It just starts small and then price-wise and, size-wise and weight-wise, and it just scales up depending on, what you want to do and how much you want to power. A lot of these are, small and carryable. You can throw them in a backpack or have them in the trunk of your car or even take them on a plane. And some of them now include a lithium battery pack and an unfoldable, thin film solar. Okay.
So there's dual ways to charge it?
Yeah, hybrid. So you can charge it either off a car, cigarette lighter, or any USB or the wall, or unfold it and put it in the sun. And those get even more handy at that point. They're still small enough to take with you, but they will do actual work. And that's the personal size power.
And sorry, any brands that you like there, if someone's motivated to go research some of these?
Yeah, we have been extremely happy with the hybrid light flashlights that are out of Utah. Actually, we've been carrying them for like 6-7 years and seen them in action, and they're reasonable price and very well. We consider them, from our perspective, one of the better made out there.
Great.
And we've also been very happy with the SunJack portable kits too, that are full power packages that fold up. There's a number of new ones that are coming on that we're evaluating more that keep going up the chain. And it's a matter of, making sure they work, though, and not being a throwaway. This is the ongoing test of quality control that has to happen in our modern economy,
Great. All right. So we've got the basics there with lighting. How about power itself?
So the next step up in the power, the personal power chain, is when you want to start having a 110 volt electricity AC to run your typical house power type things. The small level is electronics and laptops, and the LED lighting that's out now is a very good thing because it takes very little electricity. These days you can run a lot of stuff off a small amount of electricity because of the revolution in energy efficiency across the board. And we're seeing that in many, many items now, so that it's still allowing you to have a smaller system that could run a decent amount of things that you might need on your own. So these are things that you can own. And this is where we go into some of our portable solar generator stuff that's like, you know, maybe a size up to from just a little case to maybe like a rolling case or a cart that is still portable, but, you know, it's bigger in size, but it is movable. And now you can get into the kind of electricity that will run certain key items in your home. And we like to consider that the next step up from short term. You're kind of going into medium term preparedness, resiliency around your home. So what are the key things that you might want to run in your home if the electricity is out for, you know, say 3 or 4 days, 5 days, heading towards 7 days? Well, at that point, you might want to run your refrigerator. You might want to run your, you know, communications, your TV to watch news about the disaster. You might have some kind of water pump that you might need, which is, it's always dependent on how much that takes. There's a lot of other appliances that you might be able to run in your house, you know, fans and all kinds of things like that. We're talking about in the 10 to 20 amp range, being able to pull an extension cord or get, you know, a few circuits in your house running. And that's in the next size up, kind of mid-scale, still available that a solar generator can do. And these are devices that have everything included all in one, the battery and the inverter components and the solar controller and the solar panels. And that's one of our specialties. And we put those together as a bundle that you can buy and you can take with you. And these can be also put in your backyard. And also, so you can run an extension cord into your house and run things as needed for the shorter to mid-term.
Great. And just help people envision this. This is, you know, basically from what I've seen from the pictures on your site, I mean, this is a unit that has wheels.
Yes.
So it's sort of like a cart that you like you said, you can put out in your backyard. Mm-hmm. I imagine you angle it towards where it gets the best sun exposure.
Yes.
And then you run an extension cord from the unit into your house. But you can basically move this wherever you want. You can throw it in the back of a truck, take it somewhere if you wanted to take it with you to a, you know, a, if you have a, you know, cabin or some other location that you go to where you want to have power wire there.
Yes.
It's that type of transportable ability, right?
Exactly. It's personal size. If you have, you know, a small truck, a van, or a vehicle, there's different sizes. There's smaller ones you could almost fit in a car. You know, it scales up. And these are in the range of, you know, 1,000 watt outputs up to 3,000, maybe even 4,000 watt outputs. You can get different styles of them. Some of them have the main, you know, box on wheels, the solar panel separate. Some of them tie together. You know, they'll fold down. They'll come apart, so it's easier to move. The advantage of these items is this is a completely self-contained plug-and-play unit, and that you can move. It's not tied to your house electric or the grid. It's completely independent. And the other advantage they have is because the solar panels are separate, not attached to your roof, you can also move the solar panels to where the sun is.
Right.
Or move them out of the zone of disaster as needed too, as the case may be. All of these items also are designed usually with inbound chargers, and they work really, really well if you want to extend the ability of your gas generator. We talked about the usual go-to for backup house power, which is a lot of people have, which is a gas generator, which is great until you run out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you have a gas generator, it's good to keep it filled and serviced at least, and have some, you know, if you can store it safely, some extra gas. If you have one of these mid-sized solar generators, you can actually extend the runtime of your generators significantly by doing that. And we call that a hybrid system because the generator will charge the batteries up if the solar is not doing very good, if it's really cloudy or rainy. Obviously, you're getting not much solar, but they all have batteries, which is kind of like the fuel tank, but the generator can charge those batteries up at any time. The generator also allows you to run your higher amperage stuff. If you have a 3,000, 5,000, 6,000 watt generator, you can then, if you have to run your, say, your well pump or some heavier duty items that take 20 amps or more, you can do that just for the time they need to be done. But then you could turn your generator off and use your solar generator to run the smaller ticket items like your lighting and your electronics and stuff like that. We call that a power management and using the correct tool for the job, so to speak. And that what that does is it extends your runtime overall. By the hybrid system, you could switch it back and forth. And if you only have 5 gallons of gas, you want to get the maximum runtime you can.
Out of that gas, yeah.
All right, so that's where that comes in handy.
Yeah, let's take a moment to talk about that. So, not everybody listening is going to know exactly what you mean when you say a 20-amp, 20-amp appliance or whatnot.
Yeah.
But basically, the higher the amps, the more power draw that that appliance uses. And so
exactly.
I think a good example of where you would need the power of a gas power generator would be, mm-hmm. like, let's say you wanted to run a clothes dryer.
Dryer, yes.
But for like an Energy Star refrigerator, that's yes. going to use an awful lot less. And so that would be a really good candidate for the solar power generator. And so, what I like about what you're constructing here with this hybrid system is I've got a system that in theory lets me do a lot more, and I can extend the power of both sources much mm-hmm. longer by using the best source for the best moment. Of course, the solar generator is great when the sun's shining. It's much less good at night. And mm-hmm. so, you switch over to the gas generator for anything the solar generator can't do at night. Mm-hmm. But you use that gas generator for the higher amp, the things you're going to do less frequently but are more important at times, like pulling water from your well. And then if unfortunately the power outage lasts so long that you run out of gas, at least you've got that solar one to do a reduced load for as long as you can.
Yeah, and that's a good way to do it. And this brings in the third item that really helps all this happen in the planning of your home, which is the importance of energy efficiency. Mm-hmm. When you're thinking about your appliances and your usage of electricity, right now, if you go Energy Star on all your appliances, if you change all your lights to LED, if you have more recent electronic kind of stuff, more flat screen TVs and modern computers, just everything coming out of the last 5 years has really been accelerated in the energy efficiency department. And that fact alone really sets you up to be able to run much longer in your home if you've done that work on energy efficiency, because you're basically needing less electric for everything. And that is a key difference when it comes down to having no outside power for the grid. If you don't need as much electricity to run your house, then you can run a lot more and for a lot longer. And that's how it works. And the amount of equipment you'll need to run things will also be reduced too. Now, as we move into the medium term backup power into your house, it's very important that people understand you can't just take a gas generator or a solar generator and try and plug it back into the grid. There is some safety considerations. The utilities are always talking to people about that. You hear about it in Florida. It's very important that any kind of system like that, you have a safety disconnect switch installed by a professional electrical contractor that's between your meter and your main box that allows you, if you want the capability of putting power back in your house, it can do that safely without backfeeding the grid. This has been an ongoing issue whenever there's a disaster in these places, with everybody firing up generators and trying to plug it straight in their grid. You do not want to feed power back to the grid because that puts the utility workers in danger. And it's an unsafe situation. So I wanted to point that out. That's a really good idea as a homeowner to make sure you have that installed. Very least, it turns off the power to the grid when you want to plug something into your grid. And you can feed power then through your network. The next step up from that is some people are even putting in a essential needs subpanel into their house from an electrical contractor that just puts the key circuits that you might need, say like a couple lighting circuits, your pump, your refrigerator, any other kind of item like that that just is essential needs. And that way, some of these systems, you could just feed that subpanel box. And it can be done professionally, and then it's all set up, and it makes it real nice.
Great. And so that's basically a direct line from the generator to that essential needs.
Correct. Right. Yeah. The simplest one is a plug on the side of your house that will come from your generator, either 220 or 110, depending, with a switch that turns off your main meter. So you can feed power back in either from a gas generator or from a solar generator. And this goes up to the longer term solution now that's coming on very strongly is more sophisticated, larger battery backup systems that are coming on the market that are directly designed to intertie with grid solar. If you have grid tie solar on your house, and more and more people are looking at the options for that and the advantages, including all the tax breaks, most of the grid tie will not work if the grid goes down. If the utility power is not there, almost all the grid ties installed in America will stop functioning. This has been an item we've been continually pointing out to people for the last 10 years. That is starting to be rectified by some new integrated battery backup energy appliances that are coming on the market, and we're involved in that. That will install, for instance, in your garage or somewhere in your home that actually will store power from the rooftop panels and be able to run your whole house. Usually they're fed into that essential needs subpanel. And that's a full solar contractor, electric contractor type of install by a professional. These are very sophisticated. One of the key things they do right off the bat, though, is give you up to, 4 to 8 kW or maybe 12 kW of backup power on your home. Essentially, you can be independent on power if you want. There's some other features to them that are really handy. People looking to reduce their utility bill. Because you have that much storage, you can basically load shift your power and get much better utility rates. Right. You can do all kinds of tricks with the time of use rates with various utilities and that kind of thing. We predict these are going to start coming on really hot and heavy. There's some new incentives coming on, certainly in California, for this kind of thing. We see that as a big improvement of the resiliency of the electric grid in America. These kind of items are going really big in other parts of the world, including in Japan, since Fukushima happened, and in Germany, where the government was very promoting to coming off the nuclear power too. So these like very first world economy and nations are quite ahead of America in the installation of the home-based and business-based battery backup system.
Great. So, I mean, basically you're saying it's been already battle-tested in these other developed nations, and all we need to do is catch up, basically.
Yeah, they're proven out right now. The lithium battery technology is finally stabilizing. It's gone through a few rounds of, testing and engineering, and they're getting very sophisticated how these works, and that's an additional add-on for a homeowner. But when you think about the cost, items of what would it cost you to have no electricity for, 2 weeks, starts looking pretty good then.
Yeah, and it also sounds like, you'll be able to potentially save money with the system installed because you can basically draw from your battery storage and when electricity costs a lot on the grid and then only draw from the grid during the times of use where it's cheaper.
Correct. Yeah, this is actually, there's actually an economic reason that you think can be presented over your overall costs on this when you throw in the tax credits and you could almost zero out your electric bill if you wanted to.
Right. So let me just sort of repeat this back to you to make sure that I understand it, because I think this is really big news. And we have a number of listeners who you know, have solar installations on their homes, but are, I would imagine the majority of them are grid tied as opposed to off grid. Mm-hmm. But one of the downsides of grid tied, you know, solar production on your house is that when the grid goes down, you lose that electricity. You don't get access to electricity, even the ones that your panels are generating. So
yeah.
If there's a blackout in your area, there's a blackout in your house.
Correct.
Unless you're totally off grid, which, you know, comes with its own set of challenges. Yeah. And of course, we've got some folks who are listening who are off grid as well. But the challenge has been, you kind of have to be one or the other for most people.
Correct.
What you're now saying is that people who are grid tied now have the ability to be off grid mm-hmm. in a grid down event. With these interim battery backup solutions that you're talking about.
Correct.
Yeah, that is so true. That does sound like a pretty big game changer. That's really encouraging to hear.
It's all about the batteries and the integration aspect of it. And it's really come to a head and is moving quite along because of the technology.
Great. Now, you said earlier, you know, it makes total sense. This is something that should be installed and set up by a professional contractor.
Absolutely.
Two things. One, are there particular systems that you like? Again, brands that people can investigate. And then ballpark, what's this going to cost somebody who has a grid-tied house to be able to convert to this interim?
We're looking at, you know, several that are coming on very, very closely. There was quite a lot of hype over the last couple of years with the Tesla Powerwall. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is those are not readily commercially available at this time. And there's still some issues that are being worked out. We have not seen them as a go-to solution yet. There's been a lot of requests and inquiries about that, but not there. The two we're working with right now are Sonnen, which is a major German company that's doing a huge footprint in Europe, integrated battery complete package that drops in with any kind of grid tie solar. The other one we're looking at is out of Japan, Tabuchi Electric. That is very, very sophisticated, and I feel like those two are some of the primes that we're looking at right now. They're scalable in the battery size of the system, so you're looking at anywhere absolute minimum 10 to 15,000, probably with install on up to, you know, 20,000-25,000. It's a matter of the size of the system, how much electricity you want overall at one point. You want 4 kW, you want 8 kW, you want 12 kW, and then the other optional item is how much battery storage you want. For instance, do you want 1, 2, 3 days of storage, so size of the battery. So that scales up too and it impacts the cost. And then you have the cost of a professional solar contractor installing everything and doing your sub-panel box. It's a system design to be done right, but once you have that, that's going to give you a lot of peace of mind. I would think that it would be the cap of your solar investment that you have on your roof to finish that off and then have that device in there to store your power. That kind of completes the circle, really.
Okay. Oh, well, thanks for detailing that out. And so it sounds like sort of somewhere between 10 grand to 25 grand, you know, given the complexity of the system.
Yes.
And the cost of that could be partially defrayed by some of the tax credits and stuff like that.
This is correct, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Great. All right. Well, so you've taken us then through sort of the primary, you know, the immediate personal steps, the intermediary, and now we're talking about, you know, much longer term with you know, these long-term electrical production systems that we're talking about and storage systems. Mm-hmm. You know, does that complete the system, or is there any other parts of home power you think people should be?
Well, I think that's the layout is to consider is, you know, small, medium, large, and the cost factor follows that same mm-hmm. pattern. And it also follows exactly with what you're trying to do. You know, if you're just trying to get a little bit of electricity, okay, you can keep it simple and it moves up the scale and cost and size and maneuver, you know, portability. And then if you're looking for the long term, you know, real solution, obviously, that's an investment for the long term. Every one of these also includes a caveat of learning a little bit more about how you use power so you can be smarter about it, so that energy efficiency comes in really strong. You start looking at the rest of your electric use and going, how can I do this smarter? You know, and that applies to, you know, your pumps, your usage patterns, your appliances, your lighting, you know, across the board. You know, work smarter, not harder, we say. Okay. There's an interesting little key points on some of these and caveats too, that and directly related to the hurricanes, especially in Texas and Florida and Puerto Rico, which is maybe a benefit for the smaller portable ones, is that a key item in the news is that all the roofs were ripped off in the hurricane areas. Well, if your solar array is attached to your roof, that might not work out so well for you.
Very good point.
So one of the things that some people are doing, more of the extreme prepper type folks are considering, is the ability to be able to put equipment in an area that will withstand, you know, 150 mile an hour wind, or, you know, and, you know, debris flying through the air. So that's high level preparedness. And that's possibly more of a, you know, basement type situation that you can get your, you know, equipment into, or something else that's really locked down. You know, if you have a portable generator that's somewhat movable, for instance, you can actually get that into an area that, if you know that, you know, a weather related or hurricane tornado is going, you could move it out of harm's way. Because if your house and your system's, you know, damaged or destroyed in the weather, well, there goes your electric too.
Right.
So, you know, that's just a consideration. There's another point in there that's been brought up in some of the disaster preps too, which is, what about EMT pulse, solar flares and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And that's been discussed also, with the idea of, once again, secure areas for your equipment, portable. We've seen people take, you know, the shipping containers that are metal. And, you know, if you have a property, having your, you know, preparedness zone possibly packed into a shipping container, that you do a big fat ground to earth. And that actually, there's a lot of theories that in an EMT pulse or solar flare situation, that it would fry a lot of electrical stuff. That would be a huge problem in the aftermath. And there's a lot of theories that say that if you can put that into, you know, a steel cage that's well grounded, you have a much better shot of your key electrical items making it through.
Yeah. So, you know, essentially, you know, create a Faraday cage of whatever size you can, whether it's something that can fit in your basement or whether it's something large like a shipping container, but stored some percentage of your electrical tools there, essential electrical tools there, so that if there is some sort of EMP and everything does get fried, you've at least got some that have survived.
That would might be the you know, the gold standard of a backup, is if you had a 40-foot container that was you know, really locked down to the earth in concrete, bolted down, and with a big fat ground strap, and you put your key items in there. You know, might as well put some water and food in there too, and some extra fuel, and certainly your solar generating equipment and your power equipment, you might stand a good chance of getting through a lot of situations. It's just a theory.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's definitely getting to the belt and suspenders part, but those are definitely real risks. And we've talked to an expert from NASA a couple of times on this program about the risk of simply a solar flare and, you know, something of the magnitude of the you know, Carrington event that happened back in the 1900s, 1800s, happening again. And, you know, it sadly is not a dismissible risk. So that's, you know, wise to point out the wisdom of doing that if you can.
Yeah, it's something to think about. You know, all this is really, you know, looking at the idea of preparedness and the economics of it, is the real cost differential between long-term thinking or sustainable thinking, you might say, versus the short-term immediate, you know, ROI, so to speak, from a spreadsheet. Many spreadsheets I've seen don't have a column for, you know, those kind of, you know, really large scale situations where, you know, infrastructure breaks down.
Right.
And there's a missing column and number in that. Like, what does that cost? You know?
Yeah, well, it sounds like anybody who's putting solar on their house, this just should be part of the decision-making process, which is that's a large investment. They're already, you know, working with professional contractors on the design. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Certainly up there should be, okay, well, you know, how resilient do you want to be in a grid down event? And for 10,000 more, 15,000 more, 20,000 more, we can add these redundancies into your home system.
Exactly. It just allows you to be more in charge of your own situation and, you know, be able to ride out, you know, infrastructure breakdowns and just be, you know, more prepared, you know, more resilient and not dependent on some outside agency to come rescue you or, you know, all that kind of stuff is just going to be kind of things that in the long run are going to make, you know, more strong communities and more abilities to bounce back over any kind of disaster that you could think of.
Right. Well, and as we've seen both in Houston, Florida, and in the Caribbean now, you know, many, many people were completely unprepared for what happened to them. And of course, these are major disasters that have happened. I mean, it's hard to be fully prepared for a Cat 4 or Cat 5 hurricane.
No.
Or a 7.4 magnitude earthquake. You know, one of the more important and more inspiring parts that we're seeing in the aftermath are the people who do have resources, whether it's skills or, you know, they've got, you know, anything from a bit of extra water to they've got power when their neighbors don't. And they're being part of the solution, right? They're there to help out those people who weren't prepared or had their preparations swept away by the disaster. So, you know, putting yourself in the position where you can not only take care of your immediate self and family, but also be in service to those in your community. Mm-hmm. You know, we need as many people to be able to play that role when these types of tragedies occur.
Yes. This is an interesting thought on that too, that I just read an article about the kind of public disaster preparedness groups, the CERT trainings that were going around, that started usually at the volunteer fire departments, and they wanted to reach out. This was part of the Transition Town movement. This came up a lot to get more of the neighborhoods and the local communities somewhat organized along this idea of having, you know, preparedness items and equipment and training, you know, somewhat together to know where the resources are and when things really break down to be able to reach out to your immediate neighbors. And the authorities might not be answering the phone. And so better start talking to your neighbors at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, I was literally just watching the news this morning. That is the situation in Puerto Rico right now, where the police, the other, you know, civil authorities there have basically said, we're not available right now. You know, we're taking care of both our own personal families, as well as just trying to get our systems back online. Mm-hmm. So you can't count on us for at least the next couple of days, right? So, I mean, it's not a theoretical, this could happen someday. We're actually watching it happen right now in a U.S. territory. So.
Yeah, and live and direct and in real-time cell phone videos and, it's a very sobering reality check to think about ahead. As we tell people to call in after disaster, please don't wait till after disaster to call us.
Right.
It will cost a lot more and your credit card won't work.
That's right. Well, Chad, Chaz, in wrapping this up, I'm going to suspect that there's a number of people listening to this podcast who have been inspired to take some advanced action here. So we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that you run a company, Soul Solutions.
Yes.
I'm going to put you on the spot here and one, give you an opportunity to direct people who want to learn more about you and a number of the products that you discussed, where they can go. But I imagine a lot of people here are going to have questions.
Yes.
Especially because a number of the solutions you talked about, you know, really should be done in partnership with a licensed contractor mm-hmm. to make sure they're done right. Are you open to people contacting you with questions that you either can ask directly or refer them to solutions?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've actually been developing our website to have some educational material and learning around solar and some of these topics I talked about. And we keep adding on to this. And in fact, Adam, this may inspire me to rewrite a new 5-year version of the What Do You Do When the Power Goes Out white paper for you.
That'd be great if you could.
So I'm thinking there's a lot of material there to add to that now. We have some stuff like that on our website at Sol Solutions is our company, www.sol-solutions.com is our website. My email is chaz@sol-solutions.com. And our phone number, we're based in Sonoma County here in Northern California, 707-515-6783.
Great. Well, thank you for generously making all that contact information available to our folks.
Yeah.
I do suspect that you will get a number of questions from folks. Folks who are listening will put links to Chaz's site and his email address and the educational materials he mentioned that'll all accompany this podcast, so you'll be able to find it directly. Chaz, it's been a great discussion. I really appreciate you taking the time to go into this. I know there's a couple of other sort of meaty discussions related to this material. Like the level of solvency of the government, funds that are available to bail out these post-disaster areas. And of course, you know, there's a lot of malincentives there for people just to simply rebuild in places where there's probably going to be another natural disaster quite soon. So I want to flag that as material for a future podcast, because I think we could go another 45 minutes on just those alone. But I really appreciate you bringing your expertise to this topic. It's very timely and very important.
Well, I appreciate the invitation, Adam, and I really am happy and supportive of what you guys have been doing with the community you're doing on website and bringing the material that you share together to offer to people. And I've been tracking it for a while. I'm on the same page.
Well, thanks, Jess. All right. We'll get you back here soon.
Thank you much.